Welcome to Everyone is Someone Else's Other, episode 73 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Owegon. Joining me today from Dubai is Laura Kuwi to share with us her insights about being seen as the other, some approaches to working with that experience, and some approaches to working with conflict. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Joseph Addison. If people would consider not so much wherein they differ as wherein they are the same, there would be far less uncharitableness and angry feeling in the world. Laura Kuwi is a self-professed serial expat. Born in London, she grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, moved to Lebanon when she was 14 after the end of the Lebanese Civil War, lived in London for a few years when she was in university, and has lived in Dubai since 2004. Although she identifies very strongly with her Palestinian roots, home is a fluid concept for Laura, who feels like she belongs everywhere and nowhere at the same time. Growing up surrounded by difference, by people from different cultures with different languages, accents, and traditions, being different, not of the place she lived, and being reminded of that every day, Laura developed a deep, soul-filling understanding of what it feels like to be the other, along with an ability that has become so second nature it's instinctive, to put herself in other people's positions and view situations from their perspective. This understanding is what eventually forcefully pushed her to embrace her Ikigai, or reason for being, and do something very scary: quit her corporate career with blue-chip multinationals and live the life of a solopreneur on a mission to make our world a happier place. Laura consults and trains on customer experience, employee experience, and corporate culture change from a place of understanding that it is possible for everyone to be happy as long as we take the time and accept the responsibility of understanding what makes us who we are and what makes others who they are. Among other things, Laura is a founding member of the Global Women in CX community and community leader for the Women in CX Arabia chapter, a certified co-active coach, and a mentor with Regents University, London.
Thank you for joining us today, Laura. I have been looking forward to this conversation for a long time.
Likewise, Kathleen, it's honestly such a pleasure to be with you, because this is an opportunity to talk about something that is extremely meaningful for me and that I don't usually have a chance to talk about. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm delighted to give you that opportunity, Laura. I know that you grew up as a third culture kid. I've heard you refer to yourself that way. How did that impact your worldview?
Such a deep question for me right now. And I say right now because I'm watching my sister's kids grow up as third culture kids. So I'm seeing them go through what I went through. And one of the things is being quote unquote the other. So I grew up in Nigeria, in Lagos, and it was very clear that I was not of that place. And I remember there would be, you know, little kids, Nigerian kids, my age, 5, 6, 7 years old. And they had a song that they would sing to us about being white. The word for white person or foreigner is Oyibo. So they would, with these beautiful smiles, they would be singing the Oyibo song to me and my friends who were not Nigerian. And it just made it, from a very young age, made it very clear to me that I see people differently, but the people I see differently see me differently. I am the other, not them. Everybody is someone else's other. And when I realized that at such a young age, wherever I would go and whatever I would do, whether it was on holiday or moving to different countries to live, I became very aware of myself in that new environment, how I might be perceived, and then also how did I want to be perceived? And that kind of comes back to that we are empowered and we have that power to change ourselves. And so the person that I would be in different situations in different parts of the world was based on this awareness that I am someone else's other. And how does that impact my behavior? How could it or how should it impact my behavior? Because there are some places where certain behaviors are accepted, and in other places, those same behaviors are not. Certain actions, certain ways of being. And I just became very aware at a very, very young age that I had the power and also to a certain extent, the responsibility to adapt and to be the change that would get other people to see me in a way that was, how shall I put it, less other-like and more welcoming, so that I wouldn't be seen so much as a threat or an oddity. I do have to say, though, there was never any malice when those little kids would be singing the Ogibo song to me. There was never any malice in it. To the extent that the first time I was aware of malicious sexism or racism, it confused me because I had been the other and I had seen that it didn't have to be that way. So I couldn't understand the reason that anyone made it that way.
It is a tragedy how we enhance our differences in ways that can be cruel to others. And I think sometimes that's based on our own sense of ego or self-esteem, perhaps. I want to touch in on what you were talking about in terms of how you helped people see you as something other than the other. And you talked about looking at the culture that you were in and the rules and the paradigms of the culture that you were in and finding ways to adapt. And it sounded like you were saying to feel a little bit more familiar to the people around you. And yet at the same time, I heard from what you were saying that while doing that, you also maintained your authenticity. You didn't change who you were. You just changed a little bit how you showed up so that they could feel that you were more familiar. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. You definitely have that right. I didn't change who I am. I just changed how I showed up to people. And I think one of the reasons that that was so easy, first of all, because I was going through it at such a young age. But second of all, because I was growing up in a place where I was this other. And then I would go to places where I shouldn't have been the other. I am Palestinian. My family lives in Lebanon, and we went to a Lebanese school in Nigeria, but we didn't speak very good Arabic. And when we would go to Lebanon, the Lebanese would make it very clear that we were not Lebanese in the way that they were. So I was the other where I lived. I was the other where I was supposed to be from. And that made it even more important to me to be accepting of the fact that I'm the one who has to adapt. Then I can't get a whole country to adapt to me. But also it made it more important to me to, as you said, to be true to myself and to be authentic, because I can't live. I have tried to live other ways and I simply can't do it. It's not in me to put on a mask and be someone else. Because I don't feel that I can then give enough of myself that helps people in the way that I feel and I found that I can make that difference. There's that very famous poem. I forget the lady's name. Her first name is Marianne. I always forget her last name. And it's the poem that Nelson Mandela used when he was being inaugurated. And he said, "It's not our darkness that scares us. It's our light. Who are we not to shine?" And by shining our own light, we give others permission to do the same. That line has impacted me very, very much because I heard it when I was very young. And with all of this change and being other and not knowing where I belong and how do I fit in here, there, or anywhere, knowing that by being myself, I could help others be themselves and live their truth, that just really struck a chord with me from when I was a very, very young child. And one of the reasons it did that, actually, now that I think about it as well, is I was living in places and I'm from places that have had throughout the years their 15 minutes of fame on mainstream media. The thing is, when I'm watching what's happening on these mainstream TV channels or radio channels or reading in the broadsheets, and I read what they're saying about Nigeria or any other part of Africa, and I'm thinking, that's not exactly right. It's misrepresented. And what I've found is that people who are from the places that are being written about, sometimes they start behaving according to what is written and what is said to the mainstream media. And I see them struggling, and not even see with my eyes, I can just feel their struggle. And I very, very quickly, at a very young age, decided I wasn't going to do that. I was going to be authentic. I was going to adapt in order to belong, because at the end of the day, as human beings, one of the things that we strive for a lot is a sense of belonging. But I was always adamant that I would not belong at the cost of myself.
There's so many truths in what you speak, Laura. But I have found, as you have, it took me a while, but I have found that as we're talking about, I can stay true to myself, and yet I can adapt the ways that I show up to help people feel more comfortable with me. In the work that I do, which is all about service to others, I need for people to feel comfortable with me so that they will allow me to be of service to them.
That is exactly the point of what we're talking about, is that authenticity, as you said, being authentic, it can resonate with others. It's how others then feel safe, as you said, to be themselves. I was bullied quite mercilessly in school on a couple of occasions for being other, but not by Nigerian kids. It was actually by a group of girls. One was Dutch, the other was Indian, and the third one was Nigerian. And for the life of me, I mean, up till today, I have no idea how or why I was chosen, to put it that way, but I wasn't. It happened again in high school. And some people look at it as, well, you must have been bullied because you were different. Yes, okay. Why didn't you just change? And the truth is, I tried to. I tried very hard. It just doesn't work, does it, Kathleen, when we're so in tune, intuitively in tune with who we are? I was 12 years old when I was first bullied, and I just couldn't find it in myself to change and be like everyone else who was around me. It just felt so alien and in many ways wrong, as if I would be doing myself a disservice by changing who I am. We have things that we can control. One of the first things we can control, ourselves, our behaviors, our actions. We also have free will. We can choose what to adapt. We can choose what to change. We can choose what to hide, for lack of a better word. And we can choose not to as well. Many people would say to me, well, this was a conflict situation. You were being bullied. Why didn't you just change in order to make it stop? And the truth is, in some situations, no matter what you do, things won't stop. And especially if you have asked, as I did at that time, I did ask, I said, what is it that I'm doing? What is it that is angering you, annoying you? And I couldn't get a straight answer. I mean, bullies rarely know the reason. They're acting on emotion. And I didn't hate these girls. I felt sorry for me, but I didn't hate them. And what I realized then was changing who I am, even if it is going to lessen the conflict, in that particular conflict was not a change that I felt comfortable making, because I knew it wasn't the truth. I knew it wasn't real. And throughout life, I've found myself in different conflict situations. And I always come back to, what is it that I can control? What is it that I am willing to control? And then also thinking, is this a situation that I want to change, that I want to adapt to? And sometimes it's not. And that's when our free will comes in, and we have the opportunity to say, you know what? I respect where you're coming from. I understand that we have a conflict situation between us. I also understand that there are reasons for our inability to overcome this. I'm going to walk away from this now.
Sometimes we do just have to put distance between ourselves and others. In my idealistic perspective, we would be able to resolve every conflict with every person that we ever experience in our lives. And yet there's just times when we don't resonate with another person, and the upset that's caused by that lack of resonance is just too much, too destructive, and gets in the way of either one of us being truly happy with one another or with who we are with one another. And so, yes, sometimes that distancing is important. And I want to check in with you about something in talking about this perspective that people have of another person in the frame of reference as the other. I'm wondering if there's any advice that you have for people who are seeing other people as the other, and for people who are feeling as though they are being perceived as the other. Any advice that you would share with them, Laura?
So much that I would like to say to both of them. starting with the other is a matter of perception. And in both cases, whether you are looking at someone else as the other or you feel you are being looked at as the other, check in with yourself and ask yourself what it is that is making you behave a certain way or feel a certain way. I'm very adamant, ask what, not why. Because when we ask the question why, whether it's of ourselves or of other people, we are programmed to look at the word why as a challenge, and we become defensive or we become aggressive. When we ask what, it's what that allows us to start digging deeper into our psyche, into our thinking, into our beliefs, into our emotions. And that's where the clarity comes from, is when you can dig deep to get that. So that's the first thing I would say, is get clarity on the situation. What are the reasons that you're behaving in a certain way? What are the reasons that you feel that you are being treated or seen in a certain way? And also, if you are looking at someone else as the other, understand one very, very important thing. As human beings, we have fundamentally the same desires. I'm sure a lot of people still remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We have the same basic needs, food, shelter. We have the same basic emotional wants as well. I mentioned it earlier, this desire for belonging. And so understand that everybody you meet, regardless of where they're from, what they look like, are they tall, are they short, fat, thin, color of their skin, color of their eyes, hair, we all have emotions and desires. And once we can understand this and appreciate it, we can then overcome this otherness that we are seeing in the person. If, on the other hand, you are someone who is being treated as the other, you can also check in with the person that you feel this is coming from. Sometimes you'll get an answer, sometimes you won't. I think back to when I was in high school and I was being treated as the other for quite a while, despite my best efforts. I was about 15 or 16 at the time. And then one day I did ask, I said, what is it about me? What is it that's different in the way I say hello or good morning than the way someone else does? What is it that's different in the way I eat my lunch than the way you eat yours? And I couldn't get an answer. It was just energy flow. Our energy flows were not vibing. And at the time, we were quite young and we didn't really know how to overcome that. As adults, what I found is when you can point out rationally and calmly to someone else that they are treating you as another and that actually you have similar needs, wants, maybe even interests, it can change that entire situation. So those girls that bullied me in junior high when I was 12 years old, we're quite good friends now. We check in with each other every so often. And they still don't understand what happened. I still don't understand what happened, but we've let it go. Because now as adults, we've matured and we've been able to put ourselves in each other's shoes, to look at things from the different perspectives. And coming back to that circle of control that we have, control our behaviors and emotions and reactions to each other. Now, was it easy? I can only speak for me when I say not particularly, no, because the memory was still with me. But am I going to allow that memory of a very distant past? I'm 42 now. This happened when I was 12, so 30 years ago. Am I going to let something that happened 30 years ago impact negatively my present and possibly my future? No.
You touch on so many things that not only resonate for me, but also things that I've talked about in previous episodes of this podcast. I've talked many times about how important it is to use the word what rather than why. And then I've talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs so many times. I did an entire episode on Maslow and how the one thing, as you're pointing out, that connects us all is that we all have exactly the same needs. When I say exactly the same needs, I don't mean the specific details. I mean the things that you're talking about, the safety and security, survival, love and belonging, self-esteem. self-fulfillment or self-actualization. The only difference between us is whether or not those needs are getting met and how we prioritize those needs as individuals. But one of the greatest unifying things about human beings, as you're saying, that yes, we are all connected by the same kinds of needs as human beings. And when we recognize that, it can also help us be more compassionate or maybe even empathetic. I know you're also a mentor, and as part of your work with clients, you'd come across conflict situations that you have to advise them on. How do you do that?
Very much the same way as I do it for myself. One of the great joys of being a mentor, I honestly love this, is people are honest with me and they allow me to be honest with them, because mentorship, it's based on trust. It's based on mutual trust and respect, honesty, transparency. And so when they come to me with their conflict situations, and I remember one right now was not to do with my mentee, but was to do with one of her roommates who was being treated quite badly by another one of their roommates. I brought it back to, okay, sphere of control. Put yourself in that other roommate's shoes. Understand why she has singled out your friend for this. Then put yourself in your friend's shoes, which you would find easier because this person is your friend and you like them. How are they going to be able to adapt their behavior in order for this situation to either diffuse, or if there's nothing they can do, realize that they are going to walk away? When I'm mentoring, I'm usually mentoring people who are a good 20 years younger than me. And what I found is they are so open and so much more accepting of this idea of walking away from that which does not serve them than I remember myself and my classmates being when we were 20. I have no idea what changed over 20 years that made this new generation much more open and accepting to it. But when they certainly are faced with a situation and they already accept that this might be a situation where there is no resolution and I can walk away, sometimes that in itself is a resolution. When we talk about resolving conflict, it doesn't mean, as we were taught when we were younger, that everyone has to shake hands and be friends. Sometimes that can't happen. Accept that it can't happen because you are just too different or your needs and wants are too much in conflict. Respect each other for it and walk away from the situation.
Interesting. As I'm listening to you, I'm feeling a little bit of a concern come up, and that is around the tendency or the inclination that people might have to walk away because it's easier than doing the work to restore a relationship. And I definitely do agree with you that there are times when we do need to walk away. But to help our listeners get some clarity on that, how would you define the criteria that would determine whether or not it's time to walk away or it's time to gear up just a little bit more and have a little more courage and work a little harder and try to work this through? How do we know when it's time to walk away, Laura?
That is a very valid concern. And I'm glad that you brought it up because it is something that we talk about as well. And it's not something that is the first choice. Everybody that I work with, my mentees, for example, they always want to solve the situation first. It's not that they see a situation and they're like, oh, no, this is very difficult. I'm going to walk away now. They will make the effort first. Usually in a conflict situation, if we can take a step back, and I say if, because when we're in conflict situations, these are emotional situations. They're not rational situations. We're not using our minds to think. We're following our heart, usually. And if we can take a deep breath, take a step back, and look at that conflict situation, get a piece of paper, if it helps you, get that piece of paper and write down on it, this is the situation. And then write possible reasons that the situation exists. And this is when it becomes helpful to try and see things from their perspective. That's not to say that you're going to get all of the reasons or that you're going to do it perfectly, but that's not the point. The point is to shift your perception ever so slightly. So when you can put that down, you can start to see it written down in black and white. We can start to think, okay, so this is a possible reason that this conflict exists. What can I do? What can I change in order for this situation not to exist? And then we write that down. And then we look at the second thing. Okay, what are the reasons that this exists? Okay, what can I do? And we just keep asking that what question to get that clarity. And then we have a plan of different things that we can try. Sometimes it'll be changes that we make that the other person has nothing to do with. We won't ask them anything. We won't share anything with them. We will just change our behavior and see if that has a result. And sometimes we will say to the other person, do you know what? I've noticed that this conflict exists. I feel that this might be a reason for it. If it is, here is what I can do. Are you also able and willing to make an effort? I think back to a lot of relationships that I've had, not just romantic ones, but even relationships with friends, because all relationships are fluid. They all grow or not with time. And whenever I've had a conflict situation, I've looked at it and honesty is always my go-to. I will never, ever hide something with the intention of walking away or not letting the other person see how I feel, because I've found that that doesn't serve me. So I'll go to the other person and I will say, this is the situation that we have, that we're involved in together. Are you willing to work on it with me? Here are the things that we can do together. Here are the things that I can do from my side. What do you feel you can do from your side? And really having that dialogue will bring a lot of things to light. And sometimes what it brings to light is the other person, and this has happened to me as well, the other person will say, I'm not willing to work on it. We cannot impose our want on someone else's free will. We are, again, going back to that sphere of control. We can only control ourselves. So if the other person says, I'm not willing to work on it, then we know either it's going to be a very one-sided effort or this is a situation to walk away from. On the other hand, if they say we are willing to work on it, then you have that plan because you've looked at it and you've rationalized everything and you work through the steps. And if by the time you get to the end of your list of things to try, nothing's changed, the conflict is still there, then you have a choice. We always have choices. We can either live with the situation or we can walk away from it. Not all situations have to be walked away from. Some situations can be lived with when both parties know that there is a conflict and both parties are making an effort to diffuse or minimize it.
So sometimes, even if we can't resolve a conflict, we can coexist, especially if we're both making that mindful effort to, as you say, diffuse or minimize it. And I think that's a really good point. And I appreciate the delineations that you made in terms of when is it time to walk away or when is it time to look for another approach. And the things that you talked about in terms of first looking at ourselves and first looking within and then trying to look at the situation from more than one perspective, more than just our own, but as you say, putting ourselves in the other person's shoes and trying to see it from their perspective, which might help us find a shift in ours. One of my favorite quotes is, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And that's so often true. And then we can look at, is there something that we can do differently that might affect this dynamic that's not working? Then, as you were pointing out, we can look at perhaps we can invite and engage this other person in a collaboration to shift this dynamic and make it a better situation. But you didn't talk about demanding that they do something or imposing something on them, but instead inviting them to explore within themselves what they might be willing and able to do to help address the situation and shift the conflict dynamic into a better one. And all of that says to me that this process that you're describing is about evoking wisdom and invoking wisdom. I think that that's such an important thing to remember, that even though we may have our emotional reactions to things, and we may have our past experiences and our filters through which we see things and all of that, that we have an opportunity to evoke wisdom and invoke wisdom. And when we do that in a conflict situation or in any situation, the odds of a situation improving increase profoundly. Those are such wise thoughts that you're sharing, Laura, and I deeply appreciate it. I'm wondering, is there one piece of wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners in these last moments we have together?
Yes, there is. Thank you for asking. It's something that I recently became aware of. And when I say recently, probably within the last 5 years. 5 years ago, I became aware of the power of words. And when I say I became aware of it, I had always known on some level that words have power. We were taught from a very young age that words have power. When we'd call each other names when we were younger, our parents would chastise us and say, no, don't use that word. It's hurtful or it's demeaning or you know, whatever it is. What I hadn't appreciated until a few years ago is the power that words have, not just on the person who's hearing them, but on us who's saying them. And when it comes to conflict, whether it's at work or in our personal lives, understanding that the words we use have power over us just as much as they do over the person that we're speaking with, we become very aware of the words that we are choosing. And the reason I want to share this is because when we're engaged in conflict, our go-to usually is to become defensive or to become aggressive or to shift blame. And we use words like didn't, don't, can't. You know, if you're fighting with, let's say, your significant other, you might say to them, you don't treat me well. What that says to you is that you are being mistreated. So it says it to them, but it says it to you as well. And when we constantly use words that impact us negatively in a conflict situation, that can also impact our ability to involve ourselves in, as you were saying, that evoking and invoking, that growth, that wisdom, bringing that calm to the situation in order to, if possible, resolve it. And so I would encourage the listeners that when we are in a conflict situation, rather than using words, and this is something that we have to practice. It's something I became aware of 5 years ago. It's something that I still practice, and I'm not perfect at it. Be aware. Go through the conversation in your mind a few times and be aware of the words that you're using. And then write down more positive words so that when you are having that conversation, both you and the person are hearing positive rather than negative words. And that also helps to make the conversation flow in a more positive way. I'm reminded, I think it was John Lennon's grandmother who had said to him, when you are not feeling 100% yourself, rather than saying, I'm sick, say I'm healing, because that says to your body that you are getting better. Whereas when you say I'm sick, it says to your body that there's something wrong with it and your body will react. And so will your mind. So that is the one piece of wisdom I would like to share with all the listeners is be aware of the words that we use because they do impact us as well as the other person and can have a profound impact on the outcome.
I really appreciate that, Laura. There's so much richness in what you just shared and great wisdom. Thank you so much for that. And I have to say that I am so grateful, Laura, that you are on the planet, that you are doing what you're doing, that you are in my life, and that now because of this conversation, you are in the lives of our listeners. Thank you so much, Laura, for being here with me today, for being on the planet, and for being in my life.
Thank you so much for your words and for inviting me to share my wisdom.
Laura welcomes everyone to connect with her on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/LaraKHouri. And see the potential of our world through her eyes at thereisnospoon.consulting. If you're enjoying co-creating peace, there are so many ways to help this podcast stay strong and live long. Choose one, choose several, and know that I am deeply grateful for your support in any form. Subscribe to Co-Creating Peace on your favorite podcast provider.
Subscriptions improve podcast rankings. Share co-creating peace with people in your life. Share the show on your platforms, tell your friends about it, and give Co-Creating Peace a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Become a patron of Co-Creating Peace by going to www.patreon.com/co-creating-peace. That's patreon.com/co-creating-peace with no hyphen in co-creating. Your sponsorship will go toward the production expenses of this podcast. Patrons pledging $10 or more per month will receive thank you gifts ranging from communication worksheets and workbooks to free communication coaching sessions with me and Co-Creating Peace t-shirts, coffee mugs, and tote bags. Contribute to the content of this podcast by sending me your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. You can get a free 30-minute communication coaching session simply by coming on the show to talk about a communication challenge you're having. We can change the names of all involved, including you, to protect everyone's privacy. Trust me, any challenge you're having, others out there in the audience are also having. So you'll be helping them by working through your communication challenge with me. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please send those to me too. Many episode topics and guests were suggested by listeners like you. The best way to reach me is to email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I love hearing from my listeners, and I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by the patrons who support Co-Creating Peace through Patreon.com and by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.